Hey there, welcome to this edition of The Chalene Show. Today, we're going to talk about relationships, and specifically the stages of relationships, romantic relationships. And I'm going to share with you some of the not-so-pretty stages and what that looked like for us and how we got through it and where we are today. I hope this is helpful for you, even if you're not married, even if you're not in a relationship. At some point, you may be. I'm not saying you need to be. Let's get that perfectly clear. But if, in fact, you do find yourself in a romantic relationship, or you are in one, I think this episode's going to be super helpful. So let's get to it. To be clear, there are a ton of marriage books and relationship books that like to break down the stages of relationships into this kind of linear series of stages or a linear path that most relationships follow. Now, I've read many of these books, and I've lived through not only my relationship, but countless friends and family members who have been married, and some have ended up divorced, some have ended up separated and then got back together. And the one thing I know for sure is that all relationships are unique because all people are unique. Now you're putting two very unique people together. That means that the stages of relationships are not all going to be the same, and they certainly aren't all going to happen in the same order. It's kind of like grief. You know, there are certainly considered several stages of grief, but the way in which you go through them is going to be different for each person. And just as I will share today in terms of the relationship stages, you're going to go through one of these stages and then you're going to go back to a previous stage and then you might skip ahead to a later stage. Like, it's so unique, but I think understanding the stages and understanding what to expect will help you weather the storm, or maybe it will help you figure out, like, I need to get out. This is going somewhere and it ain't nowhere good. So I'm going to share with you what experts call the stage, and I'm going to share with you in some instances how I would rephrase or rename the stage. And the first stage is the passion or obsession stage. Pretty obvious. This is when we first fall in love with somebody. Actually, not even in love, because we haven't spent enough time with them to even be in love. We don't know enough about them. We haven't been through tough times. We haven't seen the dark side. We haven't experienced upheaval and challenge. But in that passion stage, they look perfect to us. Like, we romanticize their flaws. In fact, we don't really see them as flaws. We see these little things that our brain is very quick to dismiss them, wipe them away, and we might have a subconscious conversation with ourselves like, that's not a big deal. That'll work itself out. I'm not worried about that. Or maybe your brain just pushes it down and you don't think about the long-term consequences or what that could turn into. You're infatuated with them. You love the way they smell, the way they look. You love the way they talk, they act, they dress, everything. You are very sexually attracted to them, usually in this stage. You just can't get enough of them. You get butterflies when you're around them. That is the passion stage. I also think it's in that passion stage where you start daydreaming. You start fantasizing, like, what the relationship could be like. And this might be marriage for you, or it might just be being in a committed relationship with them. Maybe it means imagining what your kids would look like. I don't know, but you start to fantasize about what life could be like on a more permanent or exclusive or long-term basis. The next stage, a lot of experts call the realization stage. I like to call this stage the are we doing this stage? And again, we're talking about two people. So how you experience that stage can be different depending upon your feelings, your experiences, your background, your past, etc. But the are we doing the stage, that's when we start to realize. We start looking at our other partner and going like, there's some red flags here. I mean, their family is just a nightmare, or she's just terrible at communicating, or he is wonderful, but holy cow, is he so unreliable and late to everything and irresponsible. Like, whatever. Those things that in the past we were overlooking, now we're starting to see things more realistically. Let's just say that. We're starting to see things more realistically, but we're really still into it. But it's at that stage where you start asking yourself, well, what's next? And that can be a stage where it can make or break a relationship. If somebody has a fear of commitment, even if you're the perfect person, if they have a total fear of commitment, a fear of attachment, a fear of being abandoned, It's in that what are we doing next stage that you might feel them starting to pull back, starting to become a little more cold, a little more distant, a little less dependable, less communicative. If that person in that, so what are we doing next stage, is hell-bent on getting married or having you declare that you are boyfriend and girlfriend, you're going to feel that person do the opposite. They're going to be moving closer to you, becoming, in some cases, perhaps more needy. It's almost like it's in that stage where one partner often is like, okay, I've figured out that I can accept all of your flaws and imperfections. I see that you can accept my flaws and imperfections. Now let's go. What are we waiting for? So it's not uncommon for one partner in that realization stage to put more pressure on the other person. And you'll see them become more needy, like almost, I need you to prove to me that, you know, what do we do next is we're going to move forward. Like we're going to stay together. We're going to create something of permanence, whether that's being exclusive or calling each other boyfriend and girlfriend or moving in together or getting married, whatever it is. When you both realize like, okay, we need to do something of greater permanence, one partner isn't confident that the other partner feels the same way. And so you might often find that they're going to ask you to prove things or they'll keep revisiting the same conversation. And this is where some relationships will be made or broken. Because if the partner who's not exactly sure or has abandonment issues or fear of commitment, whatever it is, their own history, that's when they're like, you know what? I don't like this pressure. I don't like this insecure side of you that I'm seeing. I'm getting nervous. I'm getting scared. I'm getting cold feet. They're not going to say that, but that's what's going to happen. And what that will do is heighten your other flaws. And oftentimes, this is when relationships separate. But if instead you can talk about it, you can communicate with each other the stage that you're in, the fears that you have, the doubts that you have, the questions that you have, and just become a little more low key, you can get through this stage. And that's a pretty cool thing. And when Brett and I were going through the stage, we've been dating for, I think, like 3.5 years. We've been in college. He got picked up by the Toronto Argonauts and he was playing football in Canada. I was living here in Southern California. That's about that time when things were really messy, when I was, you know, working a million different jobs, et cetera. I mean, that continued into the first part of our marriage, but I'm really busy. I've graduated from college. He's off playing football. I already know I kind of don't want that life. I don't want the following him from city to city. And I just, you know, like having an online career at that point wasn't even a thing. It was not even a thing. So I wanted to be with him indefinitely. I wanted to marry him. But the thought of all of the unknowns for us was a little scary, but I was willing to set all of those aside. And when we were in this stage, I would say he was like, yeah, of course we're getting married. But that for me wasn't enough. I'd be like, okay, when and where? And what I wanted so many of the unanswered questions answered. I wanted to know, okay, and so if you get picked up by an NFL team, what would that mean? And if you don't get picked up by an NFL team, then what will you do? What will your job be? Where will we live? Most of these things he would answer for me. And so we were kind of on the same page. Like he wasn't getting scared or cold feet, et cetera, but he wasn't giving me enough solid information. Like I didn't feel secure yet of what was coming next. And so it was kind of like a constant conversation. I wanted to know, all right, well, when are you going to be proposing to me? You know, he would say, look, when I come home and visit this weekend, let's go look at houses. And I'd be like, well, why would we look at houses when I am living on my own and you're living there? When you come back here, if we were to look at a house, we would need to be married. Are you with me? I wasn't afraid to ask those questions. I also believe that it's okay to do that. I didn't feel needy about it. I felt like I want to have an honest conversation. I don't want to be misled. And I would often tell them, like, listen, I love you so much and I want to spend the rest of my life together with you too, but I need some clear indication of timeline and what it is you have in mind, because I know with 100% certainty, I want to have kids and I want to stay home with those kids and I want to be an entrepreneur and I want to have my children young. Like if for any reason you're thinking this is a 5-year deal or, you know, 10 years or whatever, like I love you, but we would need to go our separate ways. Basically, if this doesn't happen within the next 2 years, that's okay. But I need to know that, because maybe we aren't meant for each other. Like I would have those honest conversations. I was like, let's go. And they were honest conversations. If he had said, no, I don't see us getting married for 3 or 4 years, I would have broke up with him because I had other plans in mind. And that would mean that I needed to find somebody else. Like, I don't know if that would have in and of itself been a deal breaker, but, you know, we all have our flaws. And that would have been a check in the, if I'm making a list of like pros and cons, I would have been on the con side, right? So I think it's okay to have those conversations. The next stage in relationships is one that I haven't seen detailed in any book, and I don't know why, but almost everyone I know has been through this. You get through the so what's next stage, but before we do, I want to thank our show sponsor, which is my favorite CBD company. It's My Soul CBD, and when you go to mysoulcbd.com/Shalene, you don't need to enter a code. You'll automatically get 20% off at checkout. This is what I've been using to hack my sleep lately. Their dream capsules are next level. And I've been trying desperately to figure out how to get more REM sleep. I just get so much better REM sleep, which is the stuff you need for your memory, the stuff that makes sense of everything you did that day. And I definitely, without a doubt, see an increase in my REM when I take My Soul CBD dream capsules versus not taking them. But CBD in general is a wonderful way to recalibrate your central nervous system. So Brett is right now religiously taking CBD. He does a tincture under his tongue every single night and in the morning. You can try My Soul CBD, and I encourage you to do so because there's no THC. They third-party lab test all of their products. And if you don't want to do like oil droppers under your tongue, or if you're not the kind of person that wants to take a capsule, I get it. That's why I love their gummies. The gummies are wonderful. And the gummies taste like a little candy, and it's a wonderful way for you to bring down inflammation, improve sleeping, anxiety. CBD products are also available for pets, and you can check them all out by going to mysoulcbd.com/Shalene. Don't forget that, mysoulcbd.com/Shalene. You'll automatically get 20% off because they love lifers. Unfortunately, they do not yet have shipping to Canada. I'm so sorry, but we're working on it. We're going to get it to you, Canada. In the meantime, everybody else take advantage of that 20% off. No code, mysoulcbd.com/Shalene. Okay, now let's get back to talking about relationships and that stage that I mentioned. I haven't heard other experts refer to this stage, but I'll bet you $1 million it's a stage you can relate to. I like to call this stage the so we're doing this stage. And that's kind of a cool stage because you start to interject some of that passion again. Like, you can almost relax because you're like, we're doing this. It's official. Whether that's moving in or getting engaged or being newlyweds, it's like, we're doing this. And you really get excited again because you can kind of relax and you feel wanted and you feel safe and you feel secure and you feel excited. There's so many new prospects. Like, there's so much to look forward to, so much that you get to experience together, and you start fantasizing and talking about the future. And you're both really future focused, but you're also really enjoying each other. Because you know where you stand. And then the next stage is often referred to by experts as the rebellion stage. And I think this is when you're trying to figure out your identity and also understand their identity. So I remember this stage as being very contentious. And if I'm being honest, when I think back on it, there were so many things that I was trying to change about him and also like assert who I am, and he was trying to assert who he was, and things that we just, at that point, we realized, oh, wow. I mean, there's no question that we often will find a partner who has some opposite strengths and opposite personality traits that we do because we kind of balance each other out. But, you know, you think of yourself as being like perfect. And so now you're suddenly with this person who has a lot of traits that are completely opposite of yours, and they don't necessarily understand yours. And so I think in this stage where, if I'm being honest, I wanted him to be more like me. I'm like, why don't you create a to-do list every single day? How is it you aren't excited about all these different business ideas that I have? I don't understand why you would want to go back to school and get your teaching credential and do something so stable. Like, I don't understand. I don't understand how when you come home from work that you want to sit down and relax. What? Let me give you a to-do list. Let me have you become a workaholic. Let me have you become obsessed with doing something every single second and building a business. And I don't understand. I don't understand why you don't do these things. And I'm sure it drove him crazy. And I'm sure I drove him crazy. Couldn't understand why it was I couldn't stay on track or stay focused, why it was I needed to use a list if I needed to remember something. He couldn't understand why I had all these different business ideas and I couldn't just focus on one. He couldn't understand why I wouldn't think that he should deserve to just like chill out and rest on the couch if he felt like doing that. You know, so we really, in that stage anyways, I think you kind of like, there's a lot of passive aggressiveness going on, I think. For me anyways, that's how it was with us. We're kind of like fight against each other. And, you know, you start to feel like that's where some jealousy can come out, I think, some possessiveness or anger or passive aggressive behaviors. Like you're trying to figure out who each of you are in this stage. And you yet haven't recognized, in my opinion, that those opposite traits are freaking awesome and that they are the glue that eventually is going to keep the two of you strong and together. At that point, you just think, why can't they just be more like me? Now, to be fair, as I said in the beginning, not every single relationship goes through all of these stages. There are some people who completely skip the rebellion stage. That would be awesome. Do I think it's possible to do that? Yeah, I do, especially if you start your relationship off with couples counseling. I think couples counseling can help each one of these stages to be less painful and to skip some of the really painful stages, perhaps entirely. But just know this, even those painful stages, in fact, the more painful some of these stages are, the more happiness, I'm telling you, you got to trust me on this, the more happiness and peace and safety and just deliciousness you're going to experience as you move through each stage. I promise you that. Okay, so we've got this like kind of rebellious stage, and then you begin to recognize and just kind of accept each other's flaws and imperfections. In some instances, you may choose to just ignore them. In others, you may see them as a total blessing. You may learn to love the things about your partner that are so endearing, that they're so different from you. And you see that they've got these flaws and imperfections that you see as flaws and imperfections, but they see yours too. And you start to embrace them and you just accept them, right? You're not infatuated with those things. You don't absolutely love that you have these opposite traits and personality characteristics, but you're willing to accept them. And now you start moving into, I don't want to say autopilot, but there is a stage that they call it the cooperation stage. I like to think of it as the autopilot stage. This is the stage where people start saying, like, we've just started to feel like roommates, or we started to feel like friends, or it started to feel like a business arrangement, or it started to feel like an obligation, or it just started to feel stale, you know, and you're definitely cooperating with each other. You're helping each other. You've got this routine. Maybe you have kids and you're both just like in full-blown parent mode, right? Survival parent mode. So you're in business together. You're in the business of family together, but the focus is no longer growing the relationship. The focus is no longer on each other. You're just kind of looking to each other to cooperate and move forward. And that is a stage you can kind of move in and out of. Now, the next stage I want to talk to you about can happen at any time. Experts refer to it as the explosion stage. And it is, as you might expect, it means something explosive happens. It could be anything. It could be one of you losing your job, losing your business, filing for bankruptcy. It could be the loss of a child. It could be finding out that there's infidelity or a major scandal. It could be that one of your parents dies. It could be that one of your parents moves into your home. It could be that one of you suffers a tragic accident. This is a really tough stage. This is when things can hit rock bottom. This is when couples either turn to each other or away from each other. In some cases, it's an opportunity for you to become closer than you ever could possibly imagine. And if the tools aren't in place, if the foundation isn't strong before this explosion happens, 9 times out of 10, this is where people end up separating, divorcing, going their own way, breaking up, whatever you want to call it. Your relationship can't survive the explosion. The foundation isn't strong enough to rebuild. Oftentimes, after there is an explosion, you have to rebuild. You have to start over. But there's no starting over. There's no saving or salvaging or rebuilding if there's no foundation in place. And remember, that explosion can happen at any stage. It could happen early in your relationship, or it could happen 10 years, 20 years, 30 years into your relationship. But if the foundation is there, you can and will survive it. I believe that there are a few elements a few critical elements that need to be in place if, in fact, there's any chance that you're going to survive this explosion. The first of which is communication. Like, how were you communicating before this happened? Do you both have the ability to communicate on a really deep, emotional, intimate level? If not, are both of you willing to go to therapy to have someone help you do that? If you've got one partner who's a horrible communicator and also completely unwilling to go to therapy, the likelihood that you're going to survive an explosion is so low, it's not even funny. So communication, that's first. Secondly, you have to have a deep respect and actual love, admiration. You have to like the other person. If you don't like the other person at all, and then there's an explosion, again, what is the likelihood that you're going to be able to rebuild it? Not very high. But it's also not uncommon to be together for so long that you feel like you almost forget what it was you ever saw in that person. I mean, Brett and I have been at that place. I mean, there's been times in our marriage where I think to myself, I don't like this guy. Especially Brett 1.0, before our explosion. Right before our explosion, I was just like, he wasn't a great communicator, to be honest. And he's talked about that. He wasn't a great communicator. He was very closed down, very guarded, wouldn't talk about his feelings, would allow me to, but was really dismissive and short when it came to his feelings. And he was also short-tempered. And he was sometimes, I felt like, short with other people in a way that I didn't like it. And therefore, I didn't like seeing that side of him. So there were times where I'm like, I don't like this guy. What we did have, which kept us together after our explosion, was a deep admiration. So I had a deep admiration for him, and he had a deep admiration for me. I knew that he really respected. I knew he really, really liked me. And it was pretty easy once, you know, everything came to the surface. And I will talk about that in a moment. I think I'll do that in this podcast. Maybe I'll save that for Wednesday. After our explosion, after things started to unravel, the very first thing I told him, which was really in the form of an ultimatum, not a threat, because remember, a threat is something you're probably not going to follow through on. An ultimatum is, you do this, and if you don't, then this happens. And I just simply said, you will go to therapy, I will too, but we are going to therapy, and it's going to be an intense, very dedicated, very serious process, or we don't stay together. And he was super agreeable right away. So that has to be in place. Had he gone to therapy before that? No, he had not. I also strongly believe that you have got to have faith in order to keep things together after an explosion. And I don't know what you believe in or who you believe in. I am a Christian. At the time of our explosion, I don't think Brett would call himself a Christian. In fact, I know he wouldn't. He hadn't been baptized. He hadn't grown up going to church. He was, I don't know how to describe this. He didn't know enough about it. Like most people who have a lot of pride and don't want to be in a position where they know the least, anytime I talked about it or invited him to go to church, and I wasn't going to church very often then either, even though I considered myself a Christian and called myself a Christian then, faith and going to a church at that point in our relationship was not something I was doing. I knew it was something he was uncomfortable with. I didn't push it on him. I would sometimes go with friends, but it was just like, okay, my religion, my faith is mine, and I don't need to push this on him. But when that happened, the first thing I turned to was my faith. I mean, prayer and my faith in God is really what gave me permission to forgive him and to offer grace and to forgive myself. So I think that's really important. Listen, I'm sure it happens. I just don't understand how people get through explosive, dark times without believing in something, a higher power. If you are going to survive an explosion or multiple explosions, our marriage has had multiple explosions, not even joking, but each time you have an explosion, you then have to come back together in what experts call a reunion. And I like that it's called a reunion because it's kind of what it's like, right? If you think about like a family reunion, it's everyone getting back together. Everyone looks a little different. Everyone is a little different. And you're getting back together and kind of you're reminiscing about the past, but you're also creating new memories. And that's what any reunion stage is. And again, you might go through a couple. Anytime you go through an explosion, if you're going to stay together, it will be followed by a reunion stage. And what's cool about a reunion is, again, you're kind of recommitting yourself to your union. It can feel a lot like the honeymoon stage. And this is a very dangerous cycle for couples who are in abusive relationships to go back and forth between explosion and reunion, explosion and reunion. So you've got to be careful, because that reunion stage, it can feel euphoric. You're often like really into each other again. You're setting other priorities aside to focus on each other. This is when you really want to make it work and you really want to reconnect with each other, and you're spending time together and making each other the center of your universe. And you're just kind of recommitting to each other. So it can feel like a real high in a relationship. So I think where couples can get into a whole heap of trouble is when they keep repeating that cycle and almost becoming unaware of the fact that they're in this pattern. It's not a one-time event. It's not something that happens every 10 years. It's happening on a regular basis in the relationship. And that is a very common theme in abusive relationships, whether that's emotional abuse or physical abuse. It's very common for couples to experience that crisis followed by a honeymoon, crisis, honeymoon, crisis, honeymoon. And it can be so exciting to be back in the honeymoon stage that you forget how bad the crisis was, or you miss the fact that it's not going to change. This is going to happen again. That is why, in my opinion, for a healthy relationship to thrive, it is during the reunion process that you really have to take inventory of the growth that each partner needs to do. Like, you both need to grow so much in order to make sure that that doesn't happen again. Except, of course, in some cases where it's not possible. Like, it's a crisis or an explosion that you couldn't have predicted. You couldn't have predicted that you were going to lose a child. You couldn't have predicted that you were going to have a tragedy or a trauma, something horrific happen that neither of you could have avoided. And there's a completely different category for any explosion that's related to actual decisions that were made. When one partner is conducting themselves in a way that is reckless or ruthless or without regard for the safety and well-being of their family, whether that's drug use or alcohol or infidelity or some other form of betrayal, that when you come back together in your reunion stage, those things have to be addressed. They have to be fixed. And it's not just addressing the behavior, it's getting to the core. Why did this happen? Why is this person doing these things? And that, for me, in order for a relationship to avoid going through another explosion and to survive this, both of you have to go to therapy, but in particular, individual therapy for the person who jeopardized the relationship. They need to go to individual therapy. And frankly, if they don't want to do it, there's no point in forcing them to do it, which, by the way, is different from an ultimatum. Like, Brett didn't want to go to therapy, but when he was faced with a decision, it was his decision. It was like, oh, you don't have to go to therapy, but if you don't, we won't be married. So that's your choice. I can't force you to go, but please know if you don't go, we don't stay together. That's a decision. That's not forcing somebody. If somebody says, I'll go begrudgingly, and they don't have any interest in changing or improving or getting through and figuring out why they do the things that they do or what things they're dealing with, if they start going to therapy and they're just not putting forth any effort, they're not even trying, what's the point? You know, I mean, I guess you can stick with that as long as you want, but it's just a really big difference when somebody wants to make things work and is willing to do the hard, painful things. That person is willing to do the hard, painful things and face their demons and figure out what is at the root cause of these things. Like, I think they deserve your love and forgiveness in most cases. There's always exceptions to this, but in our situation, I fell in love with my husband during that process. Like, I fell deeply in love with a person who I didn't know, because for the first time he was opening up and telling me things and sharing his feelings and being vulnerable. And I was like, I love this guy. I could see the little kid in him. I saw him being kinder and sweeter and more relaxed, and his guard went down. And those early months after our first explosion really helped me to just go like, wow, this is not just a reunion. Like, I felt passion for him like I'd never felt before. I felt like our relationship was better than it could have ever been. not only were we repairing our marriage, we were making our marriage like 100 times better. Not perfect, but better. There were still things for us to work on. And those things came up like maybe 7 or 8 years later. But in that 7 to 8 years, our marriage had definitely improved. Definitely improved. I think the mistake that we made and the reason why we had another 2, really 3 explosions after that is because we thought, okay, cool, we've reunited, we worked through this, and then we kind of got lax about going to therapy. We got lax about communicating, and we slipped back into cooperation mode. We slipped back into that, like, okay, we're in the business of being parents and business owners, not we're in the business of being married. We just weren't watering the relationship. We were watering the business and we were watering our kids, but we weren't really cultivating and caring for our relationship in a deep, intimate way. We were doing all the things. We were doing date nights. We were, you know, writing each other nice cards, but it just wasn't emotionally intimate. That's the only way I can describe it. And there were money problems and we just weren't communicating about those. And there were, you know, busyness and workaholics. And, you know, we were in the business. We slipped back into that earlier stage, that cooperation stage. And if you're in the cooperation stage and you're focused on cooperating and not focused on pouring into the relationship, that's when dangerous things can happen. That's when another explosion could happen. And that was certainly true for us. I think we took our relationship for granted. And, you know, without going into all the details on this podcast, or it's going to be like 3 hours long, you know, we had another kind of moment in our relationship where it's like, are we doing this? Like, what is going on here? I'm not happy. Are you happy? And we reunited again and went back to therapy. And again, I'm here to tell you, as dark as those days were, it was the most beautiful, uplifting, delicious thing to reunite. And from that stage on, I'm trying to think what year that was, probably 2011. Yeah. From that stage on, I just can't imagine being in a better marriage. I swear to you, I know that sounds corny, goofy, whatever. I couldn't be happier. I couldn't be happier with an individual. And I tell you, 15 years ago, I can't imagine saying that and actually believing it. But today, and I would say since 2011, we have been experiencing what I would call happily ever after. And the reason why I think I can call it happily ever after, I can't see us ever going through an explosion reunion stage again. Maybe like right now, because we're, you know, taking care of Brett's dad, and it's incredibly stressful, and it's like really dark some days, and it's hard. It's really hard on us, but we're so in it together. So it feels like we're like locked arm in arm, and like just we are teammates, and we have each other's backs, and it's so awesome. Like, I can't imagine going through this without him. I cannot imagine. And I don't want to say it's fun, because no part of this is fun, but it's very rewarding and it's beautiful to have somebody to go through this with you and to be so connected and to be able to talk about our feelings and our emotions. And it's just delicious. It's the only way I can describe it. So even though we're going through a tough season, I think once you get to the stage where you're happily ever after, your tough seasons don't feel like explosions. They just feel like life. Life has ups and downs, and it's pretty amazing to be going through ups and downs with somebody who you feel so safe with, someone who you just love and adore, and you find them attractive and exciting and interesting and fun and hilarious, and you respect and love everything about them. And I can say all those things about my husband today, and I couldn't have said those things about him when we had been married for 5 years or even when we'd been together for 4 years. Absolutely not, because he didn't have this depth. He didn't have the vulnerability. And by the way, he also found Christ and made Jesus Christ his savior. Like, he is saved. And that makes him even that much more attractive to me. It makes him attractive. I'm not sure if that's the right word, but like, I respect him more because of that. And there's a depth to him that he didn't have before he found Christ. And there is this a calmness to him, and it's allowed us to be much more connected, for sure. So those are the stages. I've added a couple. I've changed a few names. Like I said, I don't think any two people will go through these stages in a linear fashion exactly in this order. I think there are many of you listening right now who you'll be fortunate enough to skip some of these stages. I think today, most people are smarter. Like, I'm Gen X. And I think our generation, Gen X, we started being like, you know what, maybe we should go to therapy. But I think millennials and Gen Z, I think they're a lot smarter about it and more open to it and recognize like how valuable it is. Because a great therapist is going to teach you how to communicate. A great therapist is going to teach you how to stay, how to understand, how to have empathy for your own experiences, your partner's experiences. And man, empathy is such a huge, important ingredient when it comes to making relationships not just last, but really thrive and have that intimate connection. I don't know how you can have an intimate connection if you don't have empathy, if you don't know what your partner has been through. If only one person does therapy, then one person's growing and the other person isn't. And that's a problem. That, my friends, is a problem in relationships. I don't know too many relationships where only one person goes to therapy and the other person is like, no, I'm good. And things work out because you both have to be growing. Or if you don't, then you grow apart. One person grows and the other person doesn't. I think it's also important because you start to be able to speak the same language. You know why certain things are going to trigger your partner that maybe they shouldn't, but they do because of their past. And it's so much easier to not take it personal and realize, oh, this has nothing to do with me. This is a trigger that's come up because of their past experiences. And listen, if you want to improve your relationship, especially those of you who are listening who are younger, invest in therapy. And don't say, I can't afford to, because isn't it funny how we can find tens of thousands of dollars, maybe even hundreds of thousands of dollars to pay for weddings and celebrations and engagement photos and new houses and new cars and all the things that couples experience when they're young and broke. But if you can afford to pay for those things, why not invest in the thing that has the greatest likelihood to keep the two of you together and healthy? Because you know what's not going to save your marriage? Buying a new Tesla. You know what's not going to save your marriage is your expensive dress or buying her a big diamond ring. Like, that doesn't make a marriage last. What makes a marriage last are the things we talked about today. It's communication. It's respect. It's having faith. It's having empathy. It's committing to each other. It's remembering why you came together in the first place and remembering that you are on the same team. Don't fight each other. Don't look at each other like you're the enemy or person who's against me. You are capable of incredible things together. Well, I hope you have enjoyed this edition of The Chalene Show. I would love it if you wrote a review. By the way, you can do that on any app that you're listening to. It means a lot. And if you do it, it takes a minute and I appreciate it. Like, you're busy. So don't forget to take a screenshot of it and share it with me on Instagram so I can say thank you. It just means a lot, you guys. I really do appreciate you. I appreciate when you listen to an episode and you're like, you know who needs to hear this? I want you to think of that person and send them this episode, especially if you know a younger couple or maybe a couple that's going through a tough time. Send them this episode. I think it'll be helpful. I know it will be. Listen, I love you. I mean that. And I'll talk to you soon.